session on the last day. Lucky me. But only the strong survive APHA, right? That's what I say. So thank you everyone for being here. Again, my name is Lindsay Riley. I'm with the NYU, New York University School of Medicine in the Department of Population Health there. And I'm going to be talking a little bit today about similar work to Michelle that, that's happening in New York State, and actually in New York City specifically, doing targeted outreach and enrollment to Asian American communities. I was supposed to have been joined by my colleague, Noylan Epizamas-Mendoza, from the Coalition for Asian American Children and Families today, but unfortunately she couldn't make it, so I'm going to do my best. I have no lucrative financial disclosures. Someday. Again, I'm going to set the context a little bit for New York State. If any of you are involved in health insurance enrollment in other states, you know that every state is different, and there are rules and regulations, and everybody decided to do it a little bit differently. So I'll give you a little bit of context, and then talk specifically about the coalition that is involved in enrollment assistance for the Asian American community in New York City, which is the Charging Forward Coalition. And then lastly, give you some of the results from our first two open enrollment periods as well, and talk about what the implications are for the current open enrollment period, which started just a few days ago. So again, I'm with the NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health, which is established in 2003 through a NIH and CMHD Project Export Center grant. And it's actually the only center of its kind in the country that's dedicated solely to research and evaluation on Asian American communities. Again, I was supposed to have been joined by my colleague from the Coalition for Asian American Children and Families today, and they're actually the lead contracting agency on this particular collaborative, and they provide all of the organizational and leadership support for this particular work that I'm going to discuss today. So, like I said, I can't necessarily take credit for all of it, but I will since she's not here. So again, I'm going to assume everybody in the room is at least broadly familiar with what's going on in terms of, you know, state versus federal health insurance exchanges. Just to give you a little bit of background about New York State, so in 2011, HHS announced that it was awarding 7 grants to help a group of early innovator states to design and implement some infrastructure to operate these state-based exchanges, with the idea that an intent that, that's okay. Hopefully no one falls asleep now. With the idea that you know, other states would later implement and adopt some of these models. So a little over a year later, our governor submitted to CMS a formal declaration of intent to establish one of these state-based exchanges in New York, what's now known today as the New York State of Health. So, you know, get covered Illinois, New York State of Health. Every state sort of has their own moniker or, you know, branding about their particular exchange. And it's really, again, very similar to Get Covered Illinois and the other state-based exchanges, designed to be sort of a one-stop shop for both public and private insurance enrollment. And sort of most notably for this presentation, in 2013, an RFA went out for an in-person assistor navigator program for the New York State of Health, which was designed to really provide consumers with in-person enrollment assistance. And in total, 50 organizations were granted funding at that time, which resulted in funds being then kind of subcontracted out to 96 different organizations across New York State to do this type of work. So one such organization that I already mentioned is the lead organization that I'm helping to represent today is the Coalition for Asian American Children and Families. And CACF is a policy and advocacy organization that represents Asian Americans in New York State. And they had at that time already an established health collaborative of community-based organizations, social service organizations that were working together to advocate kind of more broadly to address health issues in these communities. And many of them had already been previously enrolled with kind of consumer assistance programs or facilitated enrollment programs. So they've been doing this work. It was just sort of a repackaging of that type of work. So 9 of the organizations that belong to that health collaborative, along with support from CACF, actually responded and were granted funds to serve as an IPA navigator organization in New York City. And they, you know, we continue to represent ourselves as the Charging Forward Coalition. And this coalition is really, for me, a prime example of, you know, kind of the sum being greater, you know, the whole being greater than the sum of its parts, because collectively the organizations serve more than 23,000 Asian Americans in New York City, and they have the capacity to speak over 15 different languages other than English. So why would New York State want to devote specific funds and efforts to enrolling Asian Americans in New York City? Well, almost half of the Asian American population of New York City reports limited English proficiency, and roughly 28% of Asians in New York City were uninsured prior to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act in New York State. Nearly 83% are foreign-born. So these are really kind of important demographic characteristics when we talk about who some of the targeted groups are in New York City specifically that we would want to devote outreach and recruitment efforts towards. And just kind of an aside, I know there's a huge kind of model minority myth around Asian Americans, but just to dispel that, they're actually a very heterogeneous group of many different subgroups. But they're insured or underinsured for a variety of different factors, many of those being immigration status, for instance, language barriers, cultural stigmas about receipt of public benefits is a big one, as well as high rates of employment in small businesses or cash-based industries that are less likely to offer employer-sponsored coverage. And in fact, New York City is actually home to the largest number of Asian-owned small businesses in the U.S. So needless to say, there's a clear need for targeted outreach and enrollment efforts in New York City for these groups. But you know, these types of programs have been in existence for a long time. Like I said, we used to call it facilitated enrollment or consumer assistance, and now we're calling it in-person assistance/navigation. So our collaborative really decided to sit down and think, how can we take advantage of this opportunity and make this a real effort to improve upon those past efforts. And make it better than what we were doing before. So looking at our process through this sort of Plan, Do, Study, Act model for improvement, the first step was really evaluating each organization's capacity to engage in this type of work and what types of opportunities for education and training there were available. Other key questions were, what outreach strategies would we use? Very similar to the last presentation, what would be the most effective outreach strategies for these communities? And then how could we share lessons that we were learning across the different subcontracted organizations? So over the course of 4 to 6 weeks, we actually had 21 in-person assister navigators that were certified by the state to do this type of work, and that training involved a 27-hour training course as well as a certification exam at the end. In addition to the state-led efforts, our lead organization, CACF, actually held weekly phone calls to share the most up-to-date information. If any of you were involved with this type of work in year one, you know that things change very rapidly, almost hourly, actually, and for some days. So it was really critical that we had that kind of active feedback loop between organizations and we could share all of that evolving information. And they also facilitated monthly meetings. And again, these are aside from the trainings that the state did to really help augment and supplement the things that we were learning kind of week to week. Month to month, such as having members of the Chamber of Commerce come in and talk about the small business marketplace, which was something that we were less familiar with as navigator organizations, or having a tax accountant come in and talk to us about the tax implications of not having enrolled. So those are really kind of critical to helping us get equipped with the information and training that we would need. In terms of outreach strategies utilized by each agency, we were given the freedom to do what was best suited for our particular organization, and all of which I should mention targeted sort of different Asian American subgroups. So many of our groups decided to target ethnic media and do articles and ads and media roundtables. And this is actually supported by a lot of a different literature that that states that this is a really effective communication tool for Asian American communities. Another critical outreach tool was the use of community forums and workshops to provide that sort of in-language, in-person assistance. And all of these workshops were presented as an opportunity not only to learn more about the New York State of Health, but also to enroll. So, you were able to enroll on-site, which was a great benefit. Each agency also helped to translate some of the key outreach materials that were provided or produced by the state, but they weren't available in Asian languages, unfortunately, in year one and to some extent year two. And so our group kind of stepped in and decided to take it upon ourselves to help translate those materials. All in all, 9 different languages were translated. And I think that was also helpful to the state as well because they can then take those resources back. So as I mentioned before in an earlier slide, monitoring and evaluation was really kind of a key component of our from the outset of our plan to really help to support this type of work. And so, you know, this is kind of where I imagine there being like a slow drum roll, you know, like, da-da, this is what we did. So I'm happy to report that the coalition to date has implemented over 160 outreach events, which includes firing, tabling, some of the same strategies that were talked about in the last presentation in Get Covered Illinois. We've conducted over 100 community forums and workshops, reaching almost 5,000 consumers. We've engaged in almost 170 media activities, so again, those are ads and articles and roundtables, reaching nearly 6 million people. We've provided enrollment assistance to over 17,000 consumers, and again, I don't know if you remember, I said this was 21 people that is doing all of this work, just to, you know, drive it home how much work this actually involves. And lastly, we've enrolled to date over 8,000 consumers into coverage. So as you may know from this slide, which is data from the New York State of Health, there is that kind of highlighted bar, which is the Asian American results, enrollment results. But there's also a huge subset that did not report their race and ethnicity during the enrollment process because it's not a mandated field, which is unfortunate because you know, we lose about a third of the data there, and we don't know necessarily who's not being counted, if you will. From what we do know, 13% of enrollees representing over 270,000 Asian Americans were enrolled in New York State overall. Majority of those enrollees, again, being eligible for Medicaid. When we look at Medicaid enrollment specifically for year two, we can see that Asian American communities, which are in the bolded sections, they represented 9% of all Medicaid enrollees in New York State, representing approximately 47,000 individuals. When we look at Child Health Plus enrollment, very similar, represented 10% of overall Child Health Plus enrollment in New York State, which is about 5,000 Asian American children. This slide is actually data that New York State of Health released recently on all of the different languages that were requested by those that were calling the customer service line for New York State of Health. And you'll note that out of the top 12 language requests, 9 of them were actually Asian dialects or languages, and those are languages that we actually provide during our collaborative. So this really kind of drives home the importance and the need for a group like us, like ours, to specifically target Asian American communities in New York City. Looking forward to the current open enrollment period, there are a couple implications and things that are changing, one of which all of us are familiar with, are the increased penalties for the upcoming open enrollment period, which are certainly going to impact communities or continue to impact communities that are opting out of health insurance for whatever reason, whether it be affordability or immigration status. But kind of more positively, we are looking to the addition of the Essential Health Plan, which is an exciting addition to the healthcare landscape in New York State, and it'll help to fill in the affordability gaps for those that are situated kind of right outside the Medicaid threshold of 138% to 200% of federal poverty. So we're very excited about that. There's a couple challenges that we've been plagued with historically and continue to be plagued with to some extent in the next open enrollment period. One of which is that lack of disaggregated enrollment data, like I talked about. Not only are there a third of enrollees that are not reporting race and ethnicity, but of those that are, we don't know necessarily. I mean, Asian American is a huge, like I said, a huge heterogeneous group of individuals. So we don't know of that kind of larger category of people who are the subgroups that we might need to target specific efforts towards. And so that's kind of unfortunate. We're kind of working with the state to some extent to see if there are things that we could do about that. Second, there's still a lot of confusion about eligibility for health insurance for Pru-Call and DACA statuses, as well as a large population in New York City that remains undocumented. And so I'll talk about that in the next slide, sort of what the implications are looking forward for that particular population. And as this Essential Health Plan is rolled out, there's certainly going to be a lot of outreach and education that needs to be done to help facilitate consumers to understand who's eligible and how that Essential Health Plan is different from Medicaid and what the costs are associated with Essential Health Plan enrollment. And lastly, and I'd like to say, you know, we want to put ourselves out of business to some extent. You know, that's the goal, right, in public health more broadly, but definitely in health insurance enrollment. But certainly year to year as enrollment increases, but, you know, the need for in-person assisters or navigators decreases to some extent because people become familiar with the process. It's definitely a challenge to the funding landscape, as we talked about. So I'm optimistic. I think that, as great as technology is, we'll always need kind of that personal touch around this particular process because it is so incredibly confusing for anyone, but specifically for the populations that we're targeting to get enrolled. As I mentioned, two kind of exciting opportunities for expanded outreach and education efforts, as well as kind of better coordination of care for individuals that remain uninsured today. One is the Access Health NYC initiative, which is going to target specific populations that remain uninsured in New York City and will help to fund community-based organizations to do culturally and linguistically competent outreach and public education in their particular communities. The second is the Direct Access Program, which we're also very excited about. As I mentioned before, that undocumented persons in New York City continue to face challenges in accessing and utilizing care. And so, and I also should admit, many of them file taxes, so they're still subject to the tax penalties that the general public is as well. And so it was actually just announced a few weeks ago by our mayor, Bill de Blasio, that this Direct Access Program will be rolled out in the spring of 2016 as a pilot to really help coordinate access to care for approximately 1,000 uninsured immigrants in New York City. And there's some folks in the room that can certainly talk more about that particular program. We're very excited for the implications of that project to launch. And I think it's my understanding that it was guided by successful models in some other cities across the U.S. So we're excited for the enrollment or the rollout of that particular program and the impact that it's going to have on that particular population. And lastly, this is sort of like a preaching to the choir slide. I know I don't have to say these things, but it's really important, I think, that we all kind of understand and underscore this in all the work that we're doing, is that enrollment's more often not the first step in a long continuum of factors that actually lead to and impact a consumer's ability to access and utilize healthcare. I've listed a few of those examples on this slide, not necessarily in any particular order, but it just really kind of gives you a frame of reference for what people have to contend with after they've enrolled and after they've talked to us and really taken the first step. And I think this is going to be really important when we talk about determining whether or not the Affordable Care Act has actually, translated into improvements in health, whether it's affordable and whether people can, whether the demand can meet the need. The need can meet the demand. So with that, we're done. I want to thank everyone that's involved in the collaborative that I am helping to represent today, and thank all of you for being here. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lindsay, and thank you to all the panelists for presenting some wonderful work. We want to open it to questions, and if this gentleman can find the same light switch and actually give us light again, well done. I'll sit down, and if you can shout your questions, they may be able to speak from their seats, but if it isn't sufficient, let us know. Please.
I'm more interested in learning about the social media that was used for Illinois. Some specific examples of what that actually meant and what worked better than others?
Yeah, great question. So that is a
kind of
a separate study that we have going on.
Michelle, can you hear her adequately? Okay, thank you.
But I can tell you a couple of things. Number one, when we surveyed the navigators and asked them just broadly, did you use social media, we got a much lower response than when we asked the specific question to your point of did you use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Facebook and Twitter were the far and away biggest kind of mediums, I guess, used in their work. And but again, in the original study, it was just a yes or no question. So it was not how they were using it or what messages were working. We also didn't do anything to look at sort of the total numbers of followers or things like that, so the pictures or videos. So that's kind of a next step in our process, but I kind of
think
that it was those two sites.
Please.
So the first one was in the assessment on community.
If you would speak up.
And then linking it to the bonus cash. How can programs that are trying to work with health plans, the access issues and all, really help to benefit on prevention of the bonus cash or to get grants from?
Uh,
I think that there are a couple of questions that as community organizations that we might want to ask ourselves. I think one is it's important to remember that that there are opportunities to provide input at a couple of places along the way. So I would say that the first step is finding out, who is in the community benefit department or community relations department at your facility, introducing yourself, having a conversation, just getting to understand where are they in their process, because not everyone is on the exact same three-year cycle. And just learning about their current priorities and letting them know that you're a resource out there in the community and understanding, is obesity prevention a priority? Where are they working now? And I feel like, a lot of folks think about community benefits and think of the dollars first. And I thought that it was interesting when we looked in Massachusetts that there are really a small number that were doing those direct grants. And so I think it's also important to think about what are other resources, what are other ways that relationships can develop between a community organization and a facility, knowing that it might not be specifically about the funding.
And they do those every 3 years then, and update them? Okay.
Yes.
Because sometimes we're going to have a great policy that will support the things that we're doing, not necessarily
support.
Yes. And the strategic plan, that's public. Every health system has to publish that on their website. And so, if somebody's looking at linking in with the health system or looking for, funds, they can tap into that and look at that community needs assessment. And then it has our entire strategic plan for that 3 years and all the different areas that we're focusing on. So that is public.
We were about to give different answers. So health systems can submit one report. So I think that's what you were about to say, health systems.
Mm-hmm.
But that does need to get broken down at the community level. So if they're representing a really large geographic area, that will get broken down often facility by facility or community by community. It can look different ways.
Okay.
Please.
I've got a question about the UIC Navigator program. You mentioned that for year 3, there's going to be less people working, but because of the funding, or there's other reasons?
Yeah, so we have probably about the same amount of federal Navigator funding that we received the first 2 years, but specifically the state-based grant program, so for kind of the supplemental piece of it, is significantly smaller in the third year. I think that total we went from like 1250 to 850. I think that probably all these totals will have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 300 total people for the third year.
So you're going to show all the stats, right? It's still like funding.
Yeah, and we can certainly get into conversations about the Illinois state budget, but that's painful. So, but it's a function of that. It's also just a function that we are a we did not move to become a fully state-based exchange, which we are a partnership program, so there's a component of that as well.
Just to build on that one, so can you talk both of you talk a little bit more about the financial sustainability of the Navigators? Are they receiving grant only? Are they receiving a incentive per council or per person? And who are these folks? Are they public service organizations? Are they for profit? How are they kind of, what's the forecast for how they're going to be able to keep doing that work if you're already, way down
in the first couple of years? So New York is a little bit different in that it's strictly state-based exchange, so the funding goes to the State Department of Health, and it's a initially five-year grant, if you will, that subcontracts to these organizations. That money is then really subcontracted out to other smaller organizations. And so, like I said in my presentation, to some extent we want to put ourselves out of the business, right? Like, we want to take it away from the tax and smaller and smaller. But we don't necessarily know what's going to happen after year 5, which is not the funding. The other kind of challenge or caveat about the New York State funding structure is that we're not funded through outreach, we're only funded through outreach. So our in-person assistance or navigator program is really for B2B, like
categories of where people work for navigators. It seems to be, in Illinois anyway, you know, between four different sectors. One is for the community-based organization, two, some kind of on the educational or university, you know, the school-based side, help provide opportunities for the navigators and that's what we see, as well as health system. And then, mostly generally non-profit sector, but I think that the conversation about sustainability, how to fund that on an ongoing basis, has definitely been kind of on the minds of everybody kind of doing this work. So there are some sort of natural fits within the health system about kind of funding it through some kind of care coordination model. There's also some movement to kind of transition navigators into kind of a more broad-based community health worker role in Illinois. And then we've also seen a little bit of sort of overlap and movement with the sort of health insurance broker and agent community in terms of, you know, a career pathway of health insurance navigator and enrollment specialist and getting licensed and then kind of moving to the for-profit sector. So, and that sector becoming more and more engaged in working with the marketplace, and even to some extent doing some Medicaid enrollment.
In other states, some of our partnerships are funded by health plans to do the awareness education piece, so that frees up the resources for the navigators or the sisters to just do enrollment. Has any of the Illinois partnerships thought of going to that model of looking at the health plan for funding for that type of work?
Yeah, this is definitely, you know, a piece, I think, when we were kind of exploring a revenue stream for as state-based, you know, kind of the hope to move towards the state-based marketplace, looking to the health plans to kind of fund a portion of that. There's also certainly the plans in Illinois kind of have parallel outreach efforts that are going on that they are, I wouldn't say sort of co-branding with the state marketplace, but you do see kind of a fair amount of, you know, enrollment around kind of open enrollment and get covered and some of those ideas coming from the plan, but not direct, at least this stage, there hasn't been any movement of having them specifically fund the program in a more sustainable way.
We have a few minutes for other questions, comments. I think our presenters will have a few minutes after if you want to come up to them individually. And let's thank them all once again, please.